Time to get started here with our World War II segment. We'll jump right in here with Roberta. Dr. Roberta Freund-Schwartz is the Director of Musicology Division at the University of Kansas. She studies, publishes, and teaches about genres as varied as Renaissance music, African American music, blues, rock and roll. This morning, she examines how American roots music fostered a cultural and interracial friendship between the U.S. and Britain before and after World War II. Roberta?
Good morning. And let me just start by saying, if it seems like I'm leaving a lot out, I'm leaving a lot out. This is actually distilled from a much longer paper. So if you would like a copy of that, please see me after the session. Before 1960, a surprising variety of American roots music was heard on the BBC, even though the corporation felt that this music didn't really meet its standards of promoting cultural uplift of a distinctly British character. Christopher Stone, generally acknowledged as the first disc jockey in Britain, lobbied for years to convince the BBC to allow records, American or otherwise, to be played on air. In 1927, his request was finally approved. Stone had a fondness for jazz and often included American releases among the new discs he spun on Friday afternoons. Discographer Brian Rust recalled quite vividly, 70 years after the fact, hearing Stone play West End Blues by Louis Armstrong in his Hot Five, as well as other OK selections on his program. Stone and a few other commentators were occasionally allowed 15 to 30 minutes for record recitals, lectures illustrated by recordings, some of which focused on connections between American root styles and jazz. Such programs were rare, though, until Alistair Cook initiated several projects that challenged the corporation's assumptions about American music. The first was American Half Hour in 1935. The episodes employed commentary, skits, interviews, and music to introduce us, quote, to everyday America about which we seldom hear, unquote. Many of the 13 episodes were dialogue only, but his programs on cowboys, the West, and the Negro included recordings of roots music. In 1936, Cook produced a half-hour program of American hobo songs entitled From New York City to the Golden Gate. He wished to produce a longer and more comprehensive program that would trace the origin of American folk song, but there was one critical stumbling block. The only sizable collection of non-commercial American song was at the Library of Congress. Cook sought the help of Alan Lomax, assistant in charge of American folk song, who was happy to suggest appropriate material. Cook convinced the Library of Congress to grant the BBC the right to broadcast the songs once and once only, on the condition that both the original recordings and any copies be returned to Washington at the conclusion of the series. I Hear America Singing, which premiered on July 5th, 1938, was a 13-part series featuring, quote, Indian chanters, black hucksters, glee clubs, songs of the Lone Prairie, cattle roundups, speakeasies, gin joints, railroads, war, peace, and the Depression. Since the program was never recorded, only a handful of its songs have ever been identified. Blackberry Cry, a recording of a black street vendor. Old Abe Lincoln, a song from the president's 1860 campaign set to the tune of Down in Alabama, now better known as the Old Gray Mare. And Poe Farmer, collected from Lemuel Jones in Richmond, Virginia in May of 1936.
Work all the weekend, don't make enough. Pay my board and buy my snuff. It's hard, it's hard. It's hard on people, find it hard.
A reviewer for the London Times commented, although Cook's subject, the folk songs of America, is not one that might be expected to interest English listeners, the examples have been so well chosen that they are becoming interested in spite of themselves, unquote. The success of I Hear America Singing may have enabled more programs featuring American roots music, including Radio Rhythm Club and Swing Time by I Hear America Singing's young producer, Charles Chilton, and Leslie Peroni's Kings of Jazz. Each episode was a biography of an American jazz artist illustrated with their significant recordings. The format gained increasing favor with the BBC, likely because it was educational. Any enjoyment derived from the recordings was merely incidental. Almost 40 BBC staffers and guests, critics, jazz musicians, and cognoscenti, presented similar recitals before the end of the war, most featuring black American artists performing roots, jazz, and blues. Other American root styles were also heard on the BBC at this time, but not always in conventional formats. On October 31st, 1937, Big Bill Campbell and his Hillybilly Band made their debut. Campbell, nee Zeke Winters, was a Canadian emigre who'd created a successful act on stage and on the radio based on the songs and atmosphere of the Great Old West. His outre persona and his evocation of the open frontier capitalized on a keen British interest in cowboys and the American West, stimulated by Hollywood movies. Airing periodically from 1937 to 1949, Campbell's program is fondly remembered by many older Britons as their first encounter with authentic American folk music. In truth, the group's repertoire was something of a mixed bag, inasmuch as can be assessed from surviving recordings and the Hillbilly Roundup songbook, which you got free with your copy of Wild West Weekly in 1939. Mostly their songs are cowboy and folk ballads, hillbilly songs from the 1930s, original compositions, and dance band songs based on Western themes. A British Pathé pictorial review from 1943 provides a taste of Campbell's program.
Yes, folks, we're tough, mighty tough in the West. And if you want to know just how tough we are, you just listen. Play, boys. Chicken off its nest.
Oh, that's
now this story may sound cold, but we feathers speak it all. Oh, we're tough, mighty tough in the West. Hey, yes,
the Hillybilly Band approximates the interpretation of a Western swing band, but it's pretty clear from that performance that in fact the members of the Hillybilly Band are British dance musicians moonlighting as cowboys. By the way, that song, Oh, They're Tough, Mighty Tough in the West, was written by Clive Erard and Frank Trafford in 1937, two songwriters who occasionally appeared on Campbell's radio program as singing ranch hands. Overall, it's pretty hard to improve on the announcer's declaration that Campbell's is a, quote, special kind of music all his own, unquote. Nonetheless, Campbell and his Hillybilly Band were the closest thing to Western music heard regularly on the BBC, and they thrilled listeners for more than a decade. After the United States entered World War II, the BBC adopted a more liberal policy toward popular and American music in order to provide more egalitarian, morale-boosting entertainment for its embattled citizenry and their allies. Overseas feature editor Gigi Brideson regarded American roots music as the best way to promote, quote, cultural and interracial friendship, unquote, with Britain's new allies. He conceived of a series of ballad operas with folk music as a means to introduce Britons to aspects of American culture. His initial idea was, quote, a Negro musical written around a war theme, a simple sort of folktale around the lives of a man and his wife in a town like London during the war. But though their story would be London's own, the town itself, like the man and wife, would be Negro. By turning London into Harlem, two things became possible. Firstly, we could give wartime London a look at itself through Negro eyes, and secondly, we could give it a chance to imagine the Negro's own struggle. Finally, we could let it hear the best of Negro music with which the struggle was actually being waged. Brideson knew that he needed a collaborator intimately familiar with African-American culture, and he reached out to writer Langston Hughes. The two worked through the plot scene by scene, with Brideson creating the situations, and Hughes, quote, translating them into his own terms and idiom, unquote. Alan Lomax helped Brideson select appropriate music. The Man Who Went to War was recorded at the CBS studios in New York City on February 28, 1944. The production starred Canada Lee, Paul Robeson, and Ethel Waters. The rest of the cast was drawn from Alan Lomax's inner circle in New York: Sonny Terry, Brownie McGee, William Vesey, and Josh White. Robeson's introduction stressed that the story was acted and sung, quote, in the way that is natural to us, for these are the words and songs that Negroes sing, unquote. Unfortunately, no recording of the program is extant. According to Brideson, the BBC's copy of the program was damaged and later destroyed. Years later, Alan Lomax found the master copy and took it to the BBC offices in New York so that it could be copied onto tape and sent to London. Instead, it was decided to ship the discs themselves. As they were wartime stock, and thus caught on a glass base, they predictably arrived at the BBC offices, quote, in 1,000 pieces, unquote. However, I believe I found an unknown transcription copy of The Men Who Went to War in the Library of Congress. So if there's anyone in the DC area who gets out to Culpeper on a regular basis, if you could see me after the session, I have a favor to ask. For now, all that's known of the music included in the program are the high spots that Brideson recalled in his 1971 autobiography, Prospero and Ariel. Quote, Ethel Waters singing, Sometimes I Feel Like a Motherless Child, the rousing songs in The Troop Train, We're Gonna Move into Germany and Keep Your Hand on the Gun, the eerie spiritual city called Heaven, Josh White's sung narration, and the final inspiring chorus, Walk Together Children. These items are a mixture of traditional spirituals and topical songs originating with the Almanac Singers and their circle. For example, We're Gonna Move into Germany is an original blues by Brownie McGee, recorded for Ash Records by the Union Boys, McGee, White, and Terry, his fellow cast members, in March 1944. Though the text is new, the tune is borrowed from Jim Jackson's 1927 hit, Kansas City Blues.
Go to Hitler, let us, this is how it rings. Won't be long, we'll make up your dying bed. We're gonna move into Germany. Sure you born. We're gonna move into Germany. Won't be long. We're gonna move into Germany. Change the whole world around. Woo!
Depending on your listening habits, you may also recognize that as Hank Williams' 1947 hit Move It On Over, or the slightly later cover version by George Thorogood and the Destroyers. Though the numbers were presented in a somewhat unusual context and several bore new topical texts, Robeson's declaration that these were Negro songs placed them perceptually in the American roots repertoire, and they were eagerly embraced as such by millions of British listeners. Brideson asked Alistair Cook to request another ballad opera from Alan Lomax. Cook, who was, quote, fascinated with the Southern Appalachian mountaineers, especially with the feuding family clans, unquote, suggested one based on the song The Martins and the Coys, a novelty hit about the Hatfields and McCoys that was a modest hit for Ted Weems in 1936. 6 years later, it was adapted by Millard Lamble of the Almanac Singers so that the feuding families reconciled to fight fascism in Europe. The script was written by Elizabeth Littleton, Lomax's wife. He once again selected the music. Woody Guthrie and Burl Ives both played major roles in the production, and the large cast of supporting musicians included, among others, Pete Seeger, Cisco Houston, Fiddlin' Arthur Smith, Sonny Terry, and Lily Mae Ledford. Lomax described the program as a, quote, musical extravaganza based on the tall tales and the ballads of the southern mountains. Poetry and song are as natural to these folks as ordinary speech. Our play does not attempt a factual picture of mountain life, but portrays in a fanciful way the spirit and traditions of the mountaineers, unquote. As with The Men Who Went to War, the music was a combination of traditional materials and topical songs, though the latter, from what Lomax deemed the, quote, emerging tradition of the new folk community, unquote, were mostly based on American roots materials. For example, All You Fascists Bound to Lose is a Woody Guthrie number that uses the melody of Frankie and Albert, also known as Frankie and Johnny. Round and Round Hitler's Grave is a contrafact of the folk tune Old Joe Clark.
Now I wished I had a bushel, wished I had a peck. I wished I had old Hitler with a rope around his neck.
Hey, round and round Hitler's grave, round and round we go. Gonna rain that poor boy down, he won't get up no more.
Darn catchy. Even Run Boys Run, a set piece written specifically to follow the first meeting of the Martins and the Coys, and to bear, is a new text applied to the fiddle tune Hell Broke Loose in Georgia, which predates the Civil War.
The Coys and Martins split the wind, didn't want no bear to join them.
Run, boys, run, the bear's gonna get you. Run, boys, run, you better get away. Run, boys, run, the bear's gonna get you. Run, boys, run, you better get away.
A tune also known as Possum Up a Gum Tree. Brideson promptly requested another ballad opera from the Lomaxes, this one based on the American West. The Chisholm Trail premiered on the BBC in February 1945. The cast featured many of the same players as the Martins and the Coys, plus the Coon Creek Girls, Almanac's singer Lee Hayes, and Wade Maynor and Sons of the Pioneers. Producer Roy Lockwood included the following in his preface, quote, "The songs that you will hear are traditional and are sung by people who are not professional musicians in the traditional sense. They came to New York especially for this broadcast, most for the first time from various parts of America," unquote. It's hard to conceive of performers like Woody Guthrie and the Sons of the Pioneers as not professional musicians, though perhaps Lockwood did not consider American roots musicians traditional members of the profession. However, the statement that most were visiting New York for the very first time, which in fact was true only of Maynor and the Sons of the Pioneers, seems intended to contribute to the authenticity of the production. The Chisholm Trail is markedly different from The Man Who Went to War and The Martins and the Coys. There are no references either to the war or to fascism, and the story is more expansive. A rancher named Kansas Jim Johnson makes a deal with Texan Diamond Joe Chisholm to take his cows to market, which may or may not be a scam to steal the cattle. Though the sections of the dialogue are longer than the previous productions, though enlivened with enthusiastic Foley work, there are nearly as many songs. All, save for one, are folk and cowboy tunes, most included in the John Lomax collections Cowboy Songs and Other Frontier Ballads from 1910 and American Ballads and Folk Songs of 1935. Some are reworked in a fashion similar to those in the other operas. Kansas Boys, a brief but rousing number performed by Ledford and the Coon Creek Girls, is a radically reworked version of an American folk tune, and I've left a little of the dialogue in this as well.
You're scared, Dakota gal, scared and shamed.
Kansas boys raised in the ashes, didn't know how the quarter made. Turn their backs and hide their faces, sight of a pretty girl makes them free.
Sight of a pretty girl makes them free, sight of a pretty girl makes them free. Sight of a pretty girl makes them free, sight of a pretty girl makes them free. Sight of a pretty girl makes them free.
Oh, Kansas.
No, that's fine. A tender love duet performed by Burl Ives and Lily Mae Ledford and previously identified, in fact, as a version with new texts of The Texas Cowboy. Perhaps the most interesting piece, though, is one of the non-adulterated items, a cry used to get the cowboys up and moving on the trail. John Lomax described cowboys getting up holler as, quote, a common call in far west camp life, unquote, in his 1910 collection, here performed by Sonny Terry.
Wake up, Jacob, day's breaking. Pans on in a whole cake baking. Bacon in a pan, coffee in a pot, and get them while they're hot. Wake up, snakes, and bite yourselves.
And if you want to hear more, you can hear the entirety of the Chisholm Trail at www.culturalequity.org. In 1946, the BBC senior controller, Nichols, insisted that all programs on the network be, quote, British in character, unquote, and that, quote, there should be an effective resistance to the Americanization of our entertainment, unquote. However, the BBC now had to compete with foreign stations that could reach Britain and play jazz and other American popular music. Programs such as Radio Rhythm Club, Jazz Classics, and World of Jazz were, until the 1950s, the primary sources by which American roots music was transmitted to the British public. Despite their titles, the shows presented not only early jazz, but also related styles such as gospel and blues, although in limited doses. But by this time, American roots music enjoyed sufficient popularity in Britain that artists connected to the folk scene in the United States began touring the country and appearing on the BBC. The first was Josh White in 1951. In March of that year, White met Charles Chilton, who you can see on the side of the slide there. The broadcaster had already been contemplating a program for Easter that included American spirituals, and he asked White to contribute some numbers to, quote, give an authentic touch to the program, unquote. Walk Together Chillin', broadcast on February 23, 1951, proved incredibly popular, and Chilton and White immediately began collaborating on a six-part series tentatively entitled The Negro Anthology, eventually renamed The Glory Road. The series, which premiered in May of that year, was a, quote, anthology of Negro music, verse, and prose, including songs of the chain gangs, railway workers, miners, blues, and spirituals, unquote. White opened each program with the song My Guitar Is As Old As Father Time, which became so familiar that many Britons recall this as the name of the series, and I cannot tell you how long I spent trying to find the series named My Guitar is Old as Father Time. Chilton, in what was actually The Glory Road, suggested songs for White to perform, but he did so within a common sense of purpose. Quote, Josh went on the radio to sing his protest against racial injustice while I compiled the program with that in mind, unquote. One surviving fragment from The Glory Road illustrates the nature of the series.
It was with honor that I first heard Chain Gang's singing. That's really a sound to come from about 30 to 50 men all singing a work song in harmony.
Yeah, I'll bet.
I'll sing you one. I forget the name of it, but it goes something like this. And when you hear me say, ha, that's when the men would swing their hammers down. "'Twas on a Monday, I was arrested. And on a Tuesday, I was tried.
Okay, this may be the most elegantly delivered and beautifully accompanied Chain Gang song on record, but it was, in fact, a genuine one, collected by John Lomax and Harold Spivacky at the Virginia State Penitentiary in 1936, and all. The Glory Road was an unqualified success. Each year thereafter, when White went to Britain, Chilton planned additional programs, which included secular and religious anthologies as well as blues. Quote, his programs were among the best-liked programs we broadcast over the BBC. Chilton recalled, quote, I couldn't do enough of them, unquote. After The Glory Road, Chilton channeled his fascination with American roots music, whoop, not so fast, into writing multi-part musical documentaries for the BBC. These included How Music Came to Roaring Gap, with music from the California Gold Rush, The Blue and the Gray, songs of the American Civil War, The Texas Cowboy, featuring American singer and film star Tex Ritter, and Gentlemen Be Seated, a multi-part series on American minstrelsy. And Chilton also wrote and produced a weekly fictional serial called The Riders of the Range, a, quote, musical drama of the West, unquote, with songs provided by the Sons of the Saddle, which ran from 1949 to 1952 in six separate series. However, no single figure did more to bring roots music to the BBC than Alan Lomax. He arrived in Britain in 1950 to collect European folk music, and Dennis Mitchell, a BBC producer, invited him to create an original series. On February 13, 1951, Adventures in Folk Song debuted on the Home Network. The three-part series was a survey of American roots music, leavened by Lomax's tales of field recording in the 1930s. The BBC was quick to commission additional shows. Patterns in American Folk Song, also a three-part series, focused on numbers that could be traced back to British roots. The Art of the Negro aired in October and November of 1951. The first program, Mr. Jelly Roll from New Orleans, was excerpted from Lomax's Library of Congress interview with the self-declared inventor of jazz. The second, Trumpets of the Lord, highlighted gospel music. The final program, Blues in the Mississippi Night, interspersed field recordings with discs by Muddy Waters, Robert Johnson, and John Lee Hooker, and oral histories provided pseudonymously by Big Bill Brunsey, Memphis Slim, and Sonny Boy Williamson. The three bluesmen also performed examples of American folk music, and this is Memphis Slim performing I Can Hear My Name A-Ringin'.
I can hear my name a-ringin', all up and down the line.
Oh,
I can hear my name a ringing all up and down the line. Well, I know you don't love me. Am I wasting away my time?
Lomax spent much of the next 2 years on collecting trips, but during that time, he compiled the six-part series Ballads and Blues. Like Adventures in Folk Song, the program compared and contrasted traditional music from Britain and the United States based on common themes. Some of the music recorded for the program, it was recorded primarily by British musicians, though it did include items by Big Bill Burnsy and Josh White, and some thought that it was kind of weak and authentic. But Weak and inauthentic, sorry, but they were in the minority. The series was rebroadcast 4 separate times and eventually heard by more than 14 million people. The series also reflected how successfully American roots music had been introduced to British audiences. According to Ewan McCall, the purpose of Ballads and Blues was to establish that native folk music was, quote, a body of song that was just as vigorous, just as tough, and just as down to earth, unquote, as the American material being embraced by increasing numbers of his countrymen. By the late 1950s, there was a broad audience for American roots music in Britain. Recordings of American music of all kinds was becoming more widely available, and increasing numbers of roots performers toured the country. Moreover, English musicians, as demonstrated through the rise of trad jazz, were increasingly eager to perform early American folk-based styles. And their own interpretations of American roots music would in short order stimulate the skiffle craze, a British blues movement, and the rise of British R&B, which grew up to become blues rock. Countervailing impulse motivated singers and guitarists from England to plumb their own folk heritage and launch a British folk music revival that flourished throughout the 1960s. The BBC did not increasingly offer American roots music on air, particularly after the birth of rock and roll. The network now seemed more comfortable featuring its domestic equivalents. However, in a few short years, the question would be moot. With the launch of the BBC One in 1967, American roots music and the British styles that it influenced had found a permanent place on England's airwaves. Thank you.
Thank you, Bertie. Right on time.
Thanks, Roberta. Right on time. We are on a tight schedule again, and I'm going to ask Jay to come right up here.